Okay, so next up we have Stephanie Steins, and she'll be talking about mobilizing towards structural interventions for HIV prevention. She's a community coordinator of Connect to Protect at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., and has more than 15 years of experience in public health, management, community development, and training. Previously, she worked with the National Association of People with AIDS, managing an international program to increase partnerships, advocacy, and coalition building among networks of persons living with HIV/AIDS in the U.S., Caribbean, and in Africa. Ms. Steins has used her training skills to develop and deliver curriculum in areas such as leadership development, communications, and strategic planning. She has several years of experience in project management and has worked closely with women associations and other underrepresented communities with the ultimate goal of empowerment and social change. Ms. Steins received her Master's of International and Intercultural Management at the School for International Training in Vermont. She's a PhD candidate at Howard University African Studies Department, focusing on policy and international development. And I'll turn it over to her. Welcome.
Good morning. So the first slide is of our beautiful city, Washington, D.C., and I put that up there because that's the city where I focus in terms of coalition building. I'm going to have to update this and add the Martin Luther King Memorial to this now that we have that. And no relationships to disclose. So the objectives today is to provide a brief background information on Connect to Protect project and also review the priority areas of this project and highlight the accomplishments. So Connect to Protect is a multi-site project that exists in 15 urban areas across the country. C2P, Connect to Protect, mobilizes communities to bring about structural level changes that address individual level risk. And when we say structural level changes, the definition that we use is any new or modified program, practice, policies that are linkable to HIV acquisition and transmission and can be sustained over time. And structural changes is not new to the field of public health. It's been successfully implemented in various areas of public health, for example, seat belts for injury control, and many cities have passed policies against smoking in public places such as restaurants, clubs, bars. And so this project, Connect to Protect, is attempting to apply this concept of structural change to the field of HIV/AIDS. We've been successful in HIV/AIDS work in terms of taking people away from their environment and reducing their risk, but too often they will return back to their environment, which does not support our interventions. And so the idea is changing the environment in which they are to reduce their vulnerability to HIV. So our target population in terms of the Connect to Protect Washington, D.C. is Northeast zip code 20019. And we determined this geographic area by doing epidemiological mapping. And our target population is young men who have sex with men and transgender women of color. Again, this is a national project, so there are some sites that focus on heterosexual women. But based on the testing, HIV testing that we did initially, we decided to focus on this population. And we launched our strategic planning in March of 2006. So some of our coalition strengths are that we have engaged community leadership. So within the coalition here in D.C., which is called D.C. Concerned Providers, we've established a 5-member executive board that's comprised of 2 chairs, one being Connect to Protect, the other being Metro Teen AIDS, and then we have subcommittees, and the chairpersons of each of these subcommittees are part of the executive board. And these subcommittees are created based on the root causes that the coalition has identified, root causes that are fueling HIV/AIDS in the community. Another strength is networking and agenda setting. So we're very intentional as a coalition in terms of researching issues, attending meetings in the community to learn about what other people in D.C. are doing. There's a lot of coalitions that exist in D.C., so there's a need for a lot of exchange of information. And by going out into the community, we're able to identify power brokers, network with stakeholders, and then also make sure that youth issues are on the agenda around HIV/AIDS work. An example of the networking that we've done is by being a resource to the communities in D.C. So we had a town hall meeting. There was a town hall meeting on homelessness, and we were asked to present data on the needs of homeless youth to council members. Strategic partnerships is another strength. And we, again, go out into the community and try and strengthen partnerships with key stakeholders. An example is the mayor's office of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Affairs. By linking with them, they've been very helpful in terms of linking us with key players to accomplish some of our goals. We've also linked with the Department of Mental Health, Department of Child and Family Services, Department of Parks and Recreation, to name a few. Our coalition is also comprised of individuals from 9 different sectors. And you'll see we have, as I mentioned already, Department of Mental Health, HIV/AIDS Administration, Mayor's Office of LGBT Affairs, also partnering with youth-serving organizations. So in terms of the coalition and some of the root causes that the coalition has identified as root causes fueling HIV/AIDS among our population of focus, young men who have sex with men and transgender women of color. These are the root causes that the coalition has identified. So you see disproportionate rates of homelessness, lack of parental community support and safe spaces, lack of mental health services, lack of linkage to services among youth, and lack of knowledge about HIV/STI risks. And so based on these key areas that the coalition has identified, subcommittees have been created to then tackle these issues by creating structural changes. And so in the next few slides, I'm going to highlight these different root causes and then share how we went about trying to create structural change to address these issues. So first we have disproportionate rates of homelessness. So it's a fact, it's estimated that 20 to 40% of homeless youth identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or questioning. And barriers to youth-friendly resources and services tend to increase their susceptibility to risk associated with age-discordant relationships and sex work. Therefore, we decided that we needed to tackle the access barriers that youth were facing by engaging the Deputy Director of Programs at the Department of Human Services and also the Executive Director of the Community Partnership. So these two agencies provide funding so that housing services can be provided to the community. And so by linking with these two agencies, we highlighted the need for more youth-friendly facilities, specifically friendly in terms of LGBT-specific. And so by highlighting this need to these two agencies, They agreed that they would bring about policies to require their grantees to follow best practices to ensure that their facilities are more youth-friendly, more specifically LGBT-friendly. And so the best practice guidelines, examples could be the intake forms that show more inclusivity. Also, even in the waiting rooms, having posters that show acceptance of the community. But there's a long list of best practices that the housing facilities can follow. And then to go further, the Department of Human Services said, why not ensure, in order to ensure that these facilities are held accountable, what we're going to do is train our site monitors to ensure that our grantees are following these best practices. So when they go out to these facilities, they'll have a list of the best practices and see if these housing facilities are following the best practices. And then furthermore, training of all agency staff. So within the first 6 months, when someone's hired at these facilities, they go through training to learn more about transgender youth and how to be more, how to create an environment that meets their needs. So we've become a resource in the community. An example is in 2009-2010, when there were stimulus funds available around homelessness, the deputy director at the Department of Human Services came to our coalition and asked to assist in terms of providing recommendations of how these stimulus funds could be used to better meet the needs of our population. So we've completed 6 objectives, structural change objectives, and we have 2 that are currently open. And then the second root cause that's been identified is lack of parental community support. As many of you may know, common reasons for youth homelessness are family problems, transition from foster care and other public systems, and also economic challenges. So youth are more likely to become homeless or engage in high-risk behavior when there is the lack of parental and community support and safe spaces. So the coalition thought it was necessary to improve, again, the competency of caretakers of youth and expand opportunities for safe spaces. So again, we engaged in these different agencies to ensure that they, again, were able to create an environment that was more welcoming and inclusive for our population of focus. At the Department of Parks and Recreation, they agreed to train their youth program staff at all after-school and summer programs on issues related to LGBT youth. Similarly, the Department of Child and Family Services is now requiring similar training for all of their social workers. So when a social worker comes across a young person in foster care that is identifying as LGBT or Q, they will be better equipped to meet their needs. Another root cause is lack of mental health services. And what we found is within our coalition, which is made up of 15 plus primarily service providers, a lot of the service providers were saying that as youth came to seek services, when there was indication that they needed mental health support, they were having a little bit of challenges in terms of finding mental health services that they felt comfortable were equipped in terms of meeting their needs. Another root cause is newly diagnosed HIV positive youth being not linked to care. Oftentimes when they find out that they're HIV positive, they are not linking to care that's needed in terms of follow through for care and treatment. So the coalition is currently engaging in dialogue with various stakeholders, including Department of Health, to determine strategies to strengthen linkage to care and ensure that healthcare services, such as health testing sites, become more youth-friendly. I was actually talking to someone just the other day that gave me an example of a structure change that's happening in Vietnam. When I was sharing the type of work that we do, he highlighted that in Vietnam, they're now going to libraries and setting up voluntary testing and counseling. So kind of thinking out of the box and finding ways to meet youth where they are and making sure it's youth friendly. And that's just the idea of structural change. And then lack of knowledge about HIV, STI risk. So early in the strategic planning process, results of our data survey showed that one reason the target population was engaging in high-risk behavior was because of very limited knowledge about HIV risk and prevention strategies. The coalition engaged the Director of Health and Wellness for DC Public Schools and got a new policy mandating teaching of HIV STI risk curriculum to all ninth graders and new students. Shortly thereafter, the HIV surveillance data of DC released information indicating a need for increased HIV education, which affirmed that the coalition really did have their finger on the pulse. The coalition then targeted youth programs in order to increase awareness among the target population. So by going to existing after-school programs and encouraging them to do HIV education in the after-school programs, that was a way to increase knowledge about HIV/AIDS. Super Leaders was one of the after-school programs. And then an indirect what we call indirect objective, was as a result of these structural changes, Metro Teenage decided to seek funding to provide capacity building and expand to many more youth-serving organizations to do HIV training. And so the impact of the structural changes, you'll see that our target area is 219 zip code. The higher the system we go in terms of structure changes, the more impact. So this policy of all DC schools now having HIV reduction training, you'll see the impact across DC. And then in terms of the after school programs, you'll see additional impact. And then in terms of the DC Department of Parks and Recreation set up throughout DC, receiving training going across. And then healthcare providers as well. And so what we're trying to get across is the higher you go in the system in terms of changes, the greater impact that you have in terms of reducing vulnerability to HIV/AIDS and creating an environment that supports the work that we're doing around HIV prevention. And so this is just the last page highlighting preliminary data showing that actually a trend towards what we are trying to reach in terms of HIV prevention. But we're in year one of our next five-year project, and at the end of the five-year project, we'll see really the impact of these structural changes. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Stephanie.